The following podcast contains advertising. To access an ad-free version of the Lawfare podcast, become a material supporter of Lawfare at patreon.com/lawfare. That's patreon.com/lawfare. Also, check out Lawfare's other podcast offerings, Rational Security, Chatter, Lawfare No Bull, and The Aftermath.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
We're not just talking about the end products of farms. We're talking about before as well, because rail, of course, moves coal and fertilizer and the parts that we were talking about before. So it's not just that they'll be unable to move the end product, but also those products may not be able to be created. So you're definitely looking at a much larger problem. And again, the Association of American Railroads, in responding to this possible railroad strike, estimated that the U.S. economy would lose over $2 billion per day in the event of a nationwide shutdown.
I'm Benjamin Wittes, and this is the Lawfare Podcast, October 27th, 2022. You probably know Claudia Swain as the social media voice of Lawfare, where she has worked for a couple years as our social media manager. But Claudia, before she came to Lawfare, worked at the Federal Railroad Administration deep in the bureaucracy. She knows a lot about trains, and she recently wrote an article for Lawfare called "The Emerging Cyber Threat to the American Rail Industry." It's a bit of a chilling read. Trains careening out of control, controlled by Russian hackers. Now, actually, it's not really about that, but it is about the threat that the American rail industry faces as a result of all things, new computerized safety systems. She joined me in the virtual jungle studio for a fascinating conversation about positive train control, this new computerized system, and the potential cybersecurity threats it poses. It's the Lawfare Podcast, October 27th, Claudia Swain on cybersecurity and trains. So Claudia, I understand that for a lot of people, train control doesn't feel a lot like, say, air traffic control, right? The trains are on tracks. We know where they're going. You know, you couldn't have a train swerve and hit something that's not on the track. How did the problem of train control become a matter that required elaborate computer systems that are now subject to cybersecurity concerns?
So in terms of comparing it to air traffic control, that is the way that trains have operated for a while. You have a back and central office telling trains where to be, and they understand where they are because you have multiple trains on the tracks. And most of America is single tracking, which means that only one train can go in either direction. Only in really high congestion areas do you have double-sided tracking. So you can compare that to a one-lane road. And that's worked for a long time, and it does still work, and it's going to continue to work that way. There's just certain areas where either there'll be an error on behalf of the dispatcher or an error on behalf of the conductor or engineer about where the train is and what it's supposed to do. And that's why we're adding in computers as a backstop. So trains will continue to operate how they have, but there'll be this computer in the background called, the communication system is called positive train control, which in case there is an error in the system that I just described, the computer will jump in and slow or stop the train to keep it from operating unsafely.
For those of the listeners who have heard of positive train control, it is probably because of an Amtrak accident that happened, I can't remember when, but there was no positive train control, and lots of people were upset that it hadn't happened already. So give us a sense of the history of positive train control in relation to rail safety in the United States. When did somebody think that having computers run these things would increase safety? And what was the level of safety concern that led to the adoption of positive train control?
That's a great example. So you brought up the 2017 Amtrak Cascades derailment in Washington State. So that was really in the news at the time. And so hopefully listeners have heard of that. And I do just want to latch onto that a second as an example of what positive train control is going to stop. That was a situation where the train was on a curve going over a highway, and there was a certain speed restriction in that area. But unfortunately, the operator of that train didn't see it, or something happened, but the train was going 80 miles an hour around that curve, and it should not have been doing that. It's incorrect to say that there was no positive train control in that situation. Actually, this was 2017, so they were in the process of building it, and I think the tracks themselves had positive train control, but the actual train itself didn't. And so that it was unable to prevent that accident, but the government came out with a report saying that PTC would definitely have prevented that accident. In terms of the history of positive train control in this country and where we're coming from this, in 2008, Congress passed the Rail Safety Improvement Act, which would require the installation of positive train control on most of the United States, almost 140,000 route miles. So that was meant to be for a certain deadline, but as anybody familiar with government work and with huge, just massive industries like this, that the first deadline was not met, and they kept pushing it back. So it was finally implemented in, again, December 2020, and it's meant to stop, again, dispatcher or operator error resulting in a certain type of accident. So this is train-to-train collisions, derailments caused by speeding, trains improperly entering work zones, and trains entering an occupied track. It's not the most common type of accident. The most common type of train incident is, unfortunately, cars or pedestrians being on tracks where they shouldn't be. And this is my PSA, just don't do that. Trains are dangerous.
Yeah, those are often intentional, right?
Well,
there are a lot of suicides by train.
Yes. Yes, there are. But a lot of them are just people not being careful enough. You know, I'm from a town actually that has a railroad in it, and I'm certainly guilty of, as a teenager, trying to beat the train so that I don't have to wait for it to pass.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time as a kid putting quarters on tracks and seeing which trains could smush them, which trains went by that were hot enough that would melt them into the tracks. I probably spent more time than I should have as a kid playing on railroad tracks. Okay, so positive train control, do you have any doubt in your mind that it is a good thing for rail safety? That is, you know, despite all of the cybersecurity issues that it raises, which we're going to talk about in a moment, that as a trade-off, it's a good trade-off. Like maybe, you know, evil Russian hackers have a little bit more power over our trains than we'd like, and those are issues we're going to have to mitigate. But the bigger problem is actually train accidents caused by, you know, human error, and this will substantially reduce that? Or do you have doubts whether the trade-off is a good one?
I am so glad that you asked this question, because I've seen a few comments after I got the piece that people are now they're like very afraid of this. And I actually got a text from a friend showing me that a loved one had told her not to take the train because of my article. And that is not the case. This is a great trade-off. I think it's, again, it's an uncommon kind of accident, but it's a very dangerous one. So they did a study between 87 and 97. Accidents that could have been prevented with PTC resulted in an annual average of 22 injuries, 7 fatalities, and 150 people evacuated. And when you're talking about those evacuations, that's because not just from trains, but also from surrounding areas of incidents or derailments, because one of the types of rail that has to have PTC is those tracks over which poisonous and toxic by inhalation hazardous materials are freighted. And so, you know, we do have trains that transport chlorine gas, for example, and there was a derailment in the 90s that involved chlorine gas and one person died. So these are very uncommon accidents, but they're very dangerous ones. And again, the one in Washington state, I think, resulted in 3 deaths. So
for those listeners who, you know, chlorine gas is used for many things, but it is also mustard gas, which is a chemical weapon used to kill lots of people during World War I. And so a derailment with a chlorine gas car is a potential disaster that you should think of as equivalent to a chemical weapons attack.
Yes. And so this is a great leap forward in rail safety. And it's sort of similar to cars nowadays will have automatic braking if there's like a toddler in front of the car and you don't see it. I mean, can your car be hacked now? I mean, sure. Actually, I don't know a lot about that. Don't cite me on that. But it's the same thing where that's a great safety feature. And so I'm glad we have it.
All right. So with that as caveat, all, you know, positive train control, good thing, going to increase rail safety on average. Like every safety feature that is computerized, like everything that is computerized and networked, it is subject to potential malicious attack. How afraid should people be of cybersecurity issues associated with PTC? Characterize the risks for us. What are the specific concerns, and do we have studies and data that evaluate those concerns?
Yes, we do. So very briefly, I just want to go over the PTC system. It's three nodes, three factors. It's a triangle. You have the dispatch office, that's the central office. Then you have the locomotive computer, and then you have devices on the tracks or beside the tracks. And the locomotive computer is communicating with the wayside devices. You know, how fast is the train going? Where are other trains? Where am I right now? And then it's communicating with the back office. You know, how fast am I supposed to be going here? Am I supposed to stop? Is there a work zone? And the train computer will put all that together and say, okay, am I going too fast right now? And if I am, it'll slow itself down. That's very simply, you know, obviously computers don't have agency and they're tools, but that's just how I want to put it. In terms of what we have to be concerned about, well, people do want to hack trains. You know, maybe if you're just listening to this, you think, I've never hacked a train in my life. I don't want to do that. But people definitely want to hack trains. It's happened before.
So who wants to hack trains? Like, is this a hobby that people have? Is it a business? Is it a state-sponsored operation? Like, what are the categories of people who are like, there's an Amtrak going, you know, to Susquehanna, let's get it?
Ben, it is all of the above. So in terms of what we've already measured in the past, we've had state-sponsored actors. We don't know who attacked the UK. This was 2014, I think, or 15 and 16. Somebody attacked the UK, a very sophisticated actor. They never gained control. We don't know who that was, probably a state-sponsored actor. Then we have Canada in 2017, an attempted attack from North Korea. You know, who knows what they want. We've had worms, so actually WannaCry, if you remember, WannaCry got Deutsche Bahn in 2017, and then worms also got San Francisco Municipal Railway and CSX. CSX was in 2003, actually, so that's very early. And, you know, in that situation, that was a non-targeted attack. It just ended up getting those rail systems, but in those situations, it's, you know, they can hold the trains for ransom.
Right. So just, and again, just for clarification purposes, yes, the U.S. Yes. is highly rail dependent for moving cargo, much less so for moving people. But the British, the Brit Rail system and the Deutsche Bahn system in Germany are one of the principal means of intercity transportation. And so, you know, a serious cyber attack on those systems is a much, much bigger deal than a serious cyber attack on say Amtrak.
And I definitely want to address freight in America because I have a lot to say about that. But getting to your point, you also have politically motivated actors. I mean, not just state-sponsored, but also non-state. So you had, this was, in my mind, the first sort of major targeted attack on a rail system. In July 2021, a non-state group caused chaos in Iran. They hacked into the display system. So this is not the trains, but the display systems in stations and showed travelers false information, you know, your train's delayed or it's canceled or it doesn't exist. And they flashed a number which supposedly belongs to the Supreme Leader and told them to call it.
I mean, I hate the Supreme Leader as much as the next guy, but that's low. I mean, getting people on the wrong trains and stuff, figure out a different way. It's like gazillions of Iranians showing up in the wrong place. That just seems like a very low classless hack, guys.
I don't know how he gets around, but he probably does not take the train. So who knows? It's not for me to say. And then, you know, I don't know how you'll feel about this one, but in January and February of this year, a group of Belarusian politically motivated non-state actors successfully disrupted Belarusian rail. So they got into the systems of the rail system and deleted some systems, encrypted others. They made it impossible to buy tickets. And they were able to stop trains, I think, in three areas by compromising routing and switching devices. And then they claimed, not independently confirmed, but they did claim that they were able to gain control of some trains and slow them down, which if true is very worrying. And the reason they did that is they didn't agree with Belarus, with the trains going from Russia through Belarus into Ukraine to support the Russian war effort.
Right. So I am super sympathetic to the cause there. And I'm very sympathetic to Belarusian train workers who have sabotaged things. I do have a very American attitude toward cyber attacks on critical infrastructure, which is that I, you know, with very, very limited exceptions in combat zones, really don't believe in it. But yeah, that's a morally challenging one.
Yes. And to talk about what would happen in America, you brought this up a little bit earlier. You know, I get a lot of people saying to me like, oh, America has a terrible rail system. And it's like, okay, we don't have passenger system, but we do have the best freight rail in the world. A little bit biased, but I will say that. So if something happens to our rail system, you will notice. I mean, maybe you don't take Amtrak daily, but you'll notice if something happens to the freight system, which, by the way, will have ripple effects. Amtrak may not be able to operate over freight-owned track. It's a whole thing. But I want to tell you about the economy now. So the railroads that have implemented PTC move over 5 million tons of freight annually, okay? And a large part of that, of the trans-border traffic, so we're talking to Mexico and Canada, a large part of that is actually car parts. The Association of American Railroads has written quite a lot about how cars would be largely unavailable in America without trains, which I think is very funny, but also probably true. And you'll definitely notice, you know, everyone is very concerned right now about the supply chain. You know, oh, the shelves are a little bit empty. Things are more expensive. That'll definitely happen in a world without freight rail.
And we've talked a lot about this in the context of the impending freight rail workers strike that has, yes, the prospects of which have come and gone. But there is a safety element to it as well, right? I mean, if people cannot move rail cargo efficiently and cheaply and safely, there's a, you know, that's going to raise the price of goods in a substantial way.
Yes, not just the end products, by the way. We're not just talking about the end products of farms. We're talking about before as well, because rail, of course, moves coal and fertilizer and the parts that we were talking about before. So it's not just that they'll be unable to move the end product, but also those products may not be able to be created. So you're definitely looking at a much larger problem. And again, the Association of American Railroads, in responding to this possible railroad strike, estimated that the U.S. economy would lose over $2 billion per day in the event of a nationwide shutdown.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare coverage at UH1.com. That's UH1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, Lawfare listeners, Ben Wittes here. Want to tell you about the first time I got a report from the folks at Delete Me. It was shortly after I started using the service back in 2022, and they sent me their first privacy report. I have since gotten 8 others. And it contained some shocking information. They had removed my data from 56 separate data brokers, that this had included 133 separate records, including 621 individual pieces of personal information. The data broker with the most information about me was a company I'd never heard of called People by Name. And here's the thing. Since then, every couple of months, I've gotten another privacy report from Delete Me, and it always contains more information that they have removed from the data brokers about me. In the second report, they informed me they had removed my stuff from 41 data brokers, and that the one with the most information about me was called Hleck. I have no idea what Hleck is. So the other day, I got my latest report, and it includes 15 more data brokers with my personal information, 113 pieces of personally identifiable information. Big culprit this time is something called My Life. Well, I want to tell you that they don't have My Life anymore. And that is why I recommend Delete Me. As this little anecdote shows, there's a lot of my data out there, and these companies keep acquiring it and making it available to anybody who can pay. And I have slept a little bit more easily ever since I found a solution to this problem. And I want to stress, as I do every time, that I started using this before Delete Me started advertising with Lawfare. Delete Me finds and removes any personal information you don't want online, and it makes sure it stays off. And that's the point of this little story, that, you know, they keep coming back. You can get it removed once, but they'll put it back. And then Delete Me comes and takes it off again. It's a subscription service that removes your personal information from the largest people search databases on the web, and in the process helps prevent potential identity theft, doxing, and phishing scams. Delete Me sends you regular personalized privacy reports, just like the ones I've been describing, showing what info they found where they found it, and what they removed. And critically, as this story reflects, it isn't just a one-time service. It's always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you don't want on the internet. It does all the hard work of wiping you and your family's personal information off the web. Data brokers hate Delete Me, which is why I like it. Your profile is no longer theirs to sell. So take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special discount for our listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/lawfare20 and use promo code Lawfare20 at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/lawfare20 and enter code Lawfare20 at checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/lawfare20, code lawfare20. All right, so you've surveyed for us the group of actors who like to mess with trains for whatever reason. How secure is positive train control? And, you know, you're much safer under positive train control until the day that a Russian hacker decides to send your train careening at 80 miles an hour around a bend, which is, of course, precisely what the system is designed to prevent.
Well, you know, first thing I want to say is, again, we've had it on everywhere it's supposed to be since December 2020. So good so far. But of course, that's no reason to think that nothing will ever happen. You know, the principle of cybersecurity is not to prepare for if something will happen, it's to prepare for when something will happen. And I'm a little bit troubled as well. You know, something I just want to bring up since it's not in the piece is October 3rd, Amtrak had a 90-minute downtime for their servers for their positive train control. Very worrying. You know, we don't know yet whether that was an attack or if that was maybe they lost powers to their servers, which is also concerning. And they're not required to publicly report what happened. They just have to tell the government, but I hope they will be transparent about that. To get to how concerned we should be, you know, I think there is reason to worry. The rail industry has been a mechanical system for centuries, as you brought up at the top of the podcast. It's been air-gapped, which means that it hasn't touched the internet for a while, you know, and they have increasingly digitized. But this is the most fundamental change in rail safety since the 1920s. And so my first concern is that the industry might have a false sense of security as they step forward in this age. And researchers have definitely found spots where trains have been very vulnerable. There's been the instances that I've mentioned, but also in the past 20 years, there's been stuff that should not have happened. In 2008, there was a Polish boy who hacked his local tram system with a TV remote and caused 4 derailments. Now, that's not going to happen today, but historically, this is something we need to be concerned about, apparently, as little Polish boys.
It's also why, you know, you should not let your children have the TV remote. I mean, I've been warning about this for you know, ever. Don't give the kids the TV remote. It causes, you know, too much screen time and train derailments.
Okay. Apparently you've been talking to my parents.
So let me formulate it a slightly different way. What do we know about the degree to which PTC systems have been adequately penetration tested and designed with cybersecurity questions in mind? Because I'm certain that these questions were not, you know, in the front of mind of people who designed them, right?
Oh, goodness. No, it was. I have a lot of faith in the rail industry and the safety industry as well. I'm pretty familiar with the people who work on rail safety, and they are very concerned with safety. And one of the reasons I wrote this article is that people in the rail industry are talking about this, but I didn't see anybody in just the cybersecurity field talking about it. This, and I wanted to bring this issue to the wider audience. You know, I think more heads are better than one, and I just think that this is such an important issue for national security that I want more people to know about it.
So we don't really know at this stage how to, you know, the public literature does not really give us a sense of what PTC system vulnerabilities look like, or has that question been studied in an outward facing fashion?
Information about PTC, a lot of it will be available to the public. You can look in the Federal Registrar for the applications for PTC, which the government approves in a public way. You know, a lot of this is deep in the bureaucracy. You know, I am aware of security assessments in the past 20 years. There was this great security assessment in 2015 of various rail systems in both Europe and America. They didn't say which ones specifically because they didn't want to open those systems up to vulnerabilities, but they were It was pretty shocking what they found in 2015. So lack of authentication protections, the use of hard-coded passwords for remote systems. Something that I was very concerned about is they found in some rail systems, hackers would be able to access locomotive control systems directly from the in-transit entertainment systems in the passenger cabin. So obviously, that's an issue if you're watching a movie on the little screen and then you can control a locomotive from that screen. That's not good.
That doesn't seem good.
That's bad, right?
Has that been fixed?
Yeah. So that was 2015. Undoubtedly, that's been fixed. So these are kind of older things that we're talking about, but you know, important concerns, I think.
All right. So from your point of view, what needs to be done today? What are the, you know, when you say more eyes on this are better than one, what is the conversation that you think needs to take place between the cybersecurity community and the rail security community?
I'm so glad that you asked that. I want there to be more pressure on the rail industry in terms of, so if we're talking about the thing that I brought up earlier, Amtrak's PTC system was out for 90 minutes and they're not required to tell the public why that happened and what they're doing to stop that in the future. I would like them to be required to say that. You know, I would like more people to be aware of this. You know, I'd like more pressure for, you know, one of the problems with the American rail system is it's so vast. We're talking like 140 miles of track, right? And so you can't physically protect every signal device along the track. So you have to do cybersecurity in other ways. You have to make it very strong. And so one of the things as well is the vast worker system that's supporting this. I think social engineering, you know, making sure that all of the workers are trained, that this is not like, oh, you know, you have to do like a dumb PowerPoint every year. Like I want them to be very concerned about this, because if we talk about the times that America has been hacked before, so the CSX in 2003 and the San Francisco municipal railway system, those were worms. So the CSS hack was someone in Jacksonville opened an email with a malicious worm and it took out like half the trains on the East Coast belonging to CSX. Sorry, that was an exaggeration. You know, and the reason that happened, by the way, is because the computers in Jacksonville were not segmented from the computers controlling all the tracks and stuff. So, I mean, that's a very important thing. But and there's a few things that I say in the piece as well, but my biggest thing that I want people to think about and that I want the public to have some say in is that when you have something that happens to a train or a rail system or something else, you know, you have to, when you have the cyber attack, you have to take your system down. You have to take the computers offline. You have to deal with it. If it's something with the hardware, you have to replace all the hardware. And again, it's a massive rail system. So that would take a while. A paper that I really liked that I cited, Bloomfield et al. Calculated in, I think, 2016, that the total death toll would probably be like, in worst case scenario, would probably be like 100 people died. But what they say about that is that, well, you know, 100 people from like one train, maybe a few hundred more if they get a few trains, but then any responsible authority would take the trains offline. We've talked a little bit about how important trains are to the economy. And contrary to what Bloomfield et al. Was talking about in 2016, having lived through the pandemic and seen decisions that I've not agreed with between human lives and the economy, I would like that decision to be made ahead of time. If something happens, you know, what is the risk that we're willing to accept with hacked trains? And, you know, what's the choice between human lives and the wider economy? And I'd like that to make that decision now. And I'd like people to be involved in that.
And do you have a sense of what the right answer to that is? I mean, it's the kind of thing that it's a very hard question to answer in the abstract. And if you try to answer it in the abstract, the logic becomes very reptilian very quickly. On the other hand, if you answer it in a live theater environment, it becomes very emotional very quickly. So what's the right way in your judgment to think about that?
Yeah, that's hard, right? I mean, my instinct is just, you know, it's got to be human lives every time, but I do, you know, things need to be on our supermarket shelves. I think this goes back to, I know we had a Lawfare podcast with an author that was talking about planned disasters, and hopefully we can include that in the show notes because it was really interesting. But one of the biggest issues, if you're talking about the recent threatened railroad strike, is that if that had happened, we didn't really have a backup. You wouldn't be able to hire enough truck drivers. There weren't enough trucks in the United States that could have dealt with that. And that's not saying that I want to replace trains with trucks. Goodness, no, I do not. Traffic is bad enough, right? But in the sense that
trains are way better environmentally.
Yes. Oh, there are so many great things about trains. If the rest of this podcast is how great trains are, that's okay with me. But listen, all these issues that we've had with the supply chain this year, if you put a little prep into that, maybe we didn't need to have as many issues as we did.
All right. I want to close with a sense of, what you've described here is a very classic cybersecurity dilemma, which is, so far there haven't been major problems. There have been occasional problems and they're remediable. And so there's an instinct to value highly the benefits of the computerized system at the expense of the hypothetical disruption associated with leaving vulnerabilities available. And that is true until the day it's not. And very few industries, the notable exception being the finance industry, which has always invested a huge amount in cybersecurity because the financial consequences of failure are so catastrophic. But very few industries have made the calculation, we need to think about these things in a serious way before we need to think about them in a serious way, before the circumstances require it of us. You have said that you think people are thinking about cybersecurity and PTC. What does the next 5 years look like to you if they've thought about it seriously and dealt with it appropriately versus if they haven't? There are going to be hacks either way. There's going to be, your occasional accident either way. How do we know as a public if this is being well handled versus if it's being badly handled?
If it's being well handled, you will continue to not hear about PTC and not know what it is. Again, this has been in place since 2020, and most people don't know that it exists, what it is, or what it's doing. So if everything keeps going as planned, that will continue to be the case. I think it's a really interesting technology, but maybe it's better if people don't know about it because that means everything's working.
And this will be the only podcast ever recorded on PTC and cybersecurity.
Very rare, ooh. But if it doesn't happen, then you'll see news items like the hack of the Colonial Pipeline, where suddenly the American public realizes, oh, this thing was on the internet, as I now find out. And it turns out that was a big problem. And you have the ripple effects from that.
And which do you think is more likely? Are you confident about PTC staying the province of rail nerds like yourself? Or are you... you're worried enough to write the article, but are you worried enough? Is your working assumption that we're all going to learn a lot about PTC over the next few years?
I don't know if I can answer that with expert advice. I do think it's eventually going to happen. I don't know whether it happens in the next 5 years or not, but I also think that has to do a lot with the wider cyberspace, which again is another reason why I want to bring this to the wider cyberspace, because that would have to do with trends in how ransomware works and also in how cyber war goes in the future. Yeah, I think probably we will hear about it eventually. Again, we had this 90-minute server error that I wish I could know more about. I don't think it'll be the worst case scenario. I do want to tell that to people, which is that I wrote this piece, which has a lot about death and $2 billion a day. I don't think we'll get there, but I do think we'll increasingly have minor incidents. But I also feel like that about most industrial control systems.
Right. So I want to throw out another possible metric and get your reaction to it, which is there are these occasional, they're usually worms or viruses or worms or you know, some hybrid of the two that attack systems that are usually unpatched and not quite up to date. And they do it pretty indiscriminately. They're not bespoke targeted attacks on rail systems. They're just, let's see who we can get through this this mechanism. You've described the effect of some of those, like WannaCry, on rail systems and on CSX. It seems to me that the impact of such systems on well-maintained cybersecurity, well-maintained systems, the impact of such indiscriminate viruses and worms should be near zero, in the sense that if you're regularly patching your software, only the most sort of exquisitely bespoke attacks tend to get through. These are so I wonder if one of the bellwethers that we can look at is, do we continue to see worms and viruses that are not targeted at rail systems affecting PTC systems, which would be evidence that they are not being well maintained or curated. On the other hand, if you see a bunch more of these kind of WannaCry-like viruses and, you know, rail is unaffected, that sort of suggests that the cybersecurity people associated with these systems are keeping things up to date, are doing, you know, good hygiene work in general, which should in turn give one confidence that maybe they are doing what is necessary to also repel the Polish children with with TV remotes. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so too. Because a lot of the stuff that I brought up from in my piece from the researchers for the past 20 years has been all of these things that would have stopped the worms that I've talked about. So if they've addressed at least that much, it's a much better picture than we've been discussing. And I would see that positively, yes.
Another reminder that 95% of cybersecurity is the basics. Two-step verification. Don't click on the stuff from the Nigerian princes who really want to give you a lot of money. And think twice before you click on that PDF that is just so enticing. Claudia, thank you so much for joining us. Glad we have your eyes on this subject.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Thanks.
The Lawfare Podcast is produced in cooperation with the Brookings Institution. Our audio engineer this episode is the intrepid Kara Schillen of Goat Rodeo. Hey, folks, have you rated the Lawfare Podcast yet? I know there's like some jerk asks you to rate the podcast at the end of every podcast you listen to, but there's like, you know, 70,000 people are going to download and listen to this podcast at some point, and only a few of you have actually rated and reviewed the Lawfare Podcast. So I'm going to suggest that you do so. I'm going to suggest that you give us a 5-star review that maybe starts like this. Hearing Claudia Swain on cybersecurity and trains changed my life. I'm going to take trains everywhere now, but I'm going to demand that their safety systems be secure. ... Finish that any way you like. The Lawfare Podcast is edited by Jen Patya Howell. Our music is performed by Sophia Yan. And as always, thanks for listening.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.